breath, I made a show of considering her offer. "Well," I began. She instantly grew angry.
"Has Turov bought you off, then, with this crappy recruiting post?"
That stung, but I didn't let it show. Winslay, for his part, was looking less disgusted and more interested in the interplay. Other people's pain was sweet wine to him.
All right," I said. "I'll see you at 5:30.
The final hour crawled by. Winslay made numerous snide jokes, but I didn't punch him. I thought about it often, mind you, but I controlled myself, and I was proud of that. Evelyn met me at the Overlook Cafe. That was a relatively swanky place inside the mustering hall. As an enlisted man, I'd never been able to afford it. Now times had changed. As one might imagine from the name of the place, it was located in a balcony that overlooked the main floor. Down below us, the hall still echoed with shouts and the general buzz of 1,000 merged voices. In a few hours from now, everything would shut down. There'd be nothing but the roar of cleaning drones as the recruits filtered back into the city.
"You still got the book?"
Evelyn asked me quietly after our small talk died down.
"Yeah, I've got it."
After the incident at Florimel's place, I'd been allowed to collect my personal effects, and I'd claimed the book. That had been easy to do, as it had my DNA on it. I noticed Evelyn was giving me the stink eye for some reason.
"What?"
I asked.
"When I heard there was some kind of a mass murder due to a love triangle with you in the middle of it."
"That's not how it went," I protested. She raised a small hand to stop me.
"Okay, it doesn't matter. You've got the book, and I want it back."
I reached down under the table to draw it out of my pack, but I stopped. I considered my options. With a shrug, I slid my hand back up onto the tabletop again. I took a bite of my pastrami sandwich. It was good. "I don't have it on me," I lied.
"Where is it?"
she asked, suddenly intense. I shrugged again.
"Come on, James. It's just a book. I gave it to you. It's mine."
"I found it long before you even knew it existed," I pointed out.
"You didn't leave it in Florimel's apartment, did you?"
"I did, actually, when I died. But I picked it up early this morning." That was the truth, but she still looked suspicious. Evelyn flopped back in her chair and crossed her arms.
"What do you want for it?"
she said in a resigned voice. "Revive Florimel. I want to see her breathing again."
"That will happen, eventually. It's up to Central Admin. She's not part of any Legion, you know."
"I know that," I said. "No one wants to pay for it, but you should want to. She read the book. She knows things about it. She took notes, had ideas." She leaned forward again with hungry eyes.
"Tell me what she said."
Again, I chewed my sandwich and stared at her blankly. My jaws moved with exaggerated slowness. Evelyn set her own jaw, and finally, her small head gave a tiny, tight nod.
"All right. Fine. I get it. I'll get your girlfriend revived, but you damned well better hand over that book after I do."
She stormed out then, leaving me at the Overlook Cafe. As I was stuck with the bill and she hadn't touched her food, I snaked out a long arm and scooped up her dinner. After polishing off both plates, I felt better. Two plates. That was my standard for a full meal. Thinking about the book in my bag, I decided it would be for the best if I stashed it somewhere down around my home. Swamps had always been used to hide any number of sins, and my backyard seemed like just the right place to keep something people wanted so badly. Sauntering down to the testing arenas, I watched a few young punks who were fighting robots with cattle goads. It wasn't pretty. Some of them ended up in the sawdust, curled into fetal balls. They were squirming, gasping, and puking. Not one of them thought to zap the robot's power cord. They probably didn't belong in Legion Varus. Then I caught sight of the snot-nosed kid who'd come downstairs to crap on my parade. Cooper was in the psych booths, trying to answer the test questions. He was frowning fiercely, and I could tell he really wanted to do well. Hey, kid, I called out to him. Cooper's head jerked up, and I grinned at him. Relax, I told him. Don't worry about that bullshit test. Don't overthink it. Just be yourself. He blinked at me, but then he nodded and turned back to his test. A stern hog officer was already frowning at me. She suspected I was helping him cheat. But that was far, far from the truth. Those tests did a pretty good job of figuring out who a man really was inside. I felt sure that if this cocky punk answered honestly, the psychs would figure out the cold truth. Cooper was a complete and utter asshole. Smiling with that thought, I left the hall for the night. I felt confident I'd helped at least one kid end up where he really belonged. Call it my good deed for the day. Chapter 7. Drusus called all the Varus officers together the next morning. It was early, 6 a.m., and I had a full day ahead of me in the recruiting booth at the hall. Bleary-eyed, I tried to pay attention. Today, I've called you all here because a new challenge faces Earth. I crossed my arms and stifled a yawn. I'd heard this before. This time, however, we're not planning a defense, and the Magua don't appear to be involved. Instead, we're going to project the growing power of Earth into the disputed region. Drusus made a spinning motion with his arm, and the wall behind him lit up. The smart walls were always watching us these days. Stars glittered, laid out in a familiar pattern. I quickly got my bearings, which was made easier by a labeling system that placed various symbols and strips of text on the various star systems. "Here's Earth," he said, "in the solar system." He indicated a yellow-white dwarf star in the right quadrant of the long rectangular display. "Farther out in that direction," he said, using a gesture to place a pulsing arrow on the wall, "lies the center of the galaxy and the galactics. To the left of this display is the frontier. As you can see, we're less than 100 light-years from the edge of the Empire." I felt like a kid in school. If he was going to keep on lecturing on basic star maps, I'd soon nod off. I knew myself it was inevitable. "When the cephalopod kingdom fell," he continued, "it theoretically left a vast swath of space under our control, but they didn't hand it over cleanly. We've managed to exert control over only 9 stars." These lit up promptly. The computer was listening and responding to his words. "So few, really. Zeta Herculis, Gamma Pavonis, a smattering of others. Most recently we took Epsilon Leporis." A red star lit up deep in the disputed territory. It was well known to me, and its primary planet was better known as Blood World. "So there you have it. We've got our home world and a few other colonies. We control a planet with vast mineral wealth, another planet with a large population of trained ground troops. What, you might ask, could be missing? Aren't we ready to bring order to the rest of these 300-odd inhabited systems?" A large, lit-up section appeared. It extended from near Earth all the way over to the Rigel region, which was beyond the frontier. We were only starting to learn of the barbaric societies that lived out there beyond the fringe. He looked at us for a long moment as if expecting an answer. I felt compelled to speak. "We need starships," I shouted out, cupping my hands over my mouth to make a megaphone. Drusus smiled momentarily and nodded to me. "Centurion, Adjunct McGill?" He frowned, noting my new rank insignia. He cleared his throat after a glance at Turov, who said nothing. After a moment, he continued. "In any case, McGill is quite right. We need starships. We need an industrial base in the middle of the region." Here on Earth, we've managed to construct a few space docks, surely. But what if we could do better than that? What if we gained control of a planet with a greater industrial capacity? Then we'd kick some alien tail, I shouted out. A few laughed, a few frowned. I didn't care, I'd already lost my rank. They could bust me down to recruit if they wanted to. I was done with being quiet. Drusus gave me a slightly pained smile. Right, so that's the essence of the plan. We need to capture a world close to Blood World and make it an advanced base for the construction of a fleet. There are more reasons for this, other than needing the production capacity. Now this was interesting. I shut up and I listened. Drusus explained how the advanced base had to be close to Blood World to protect our new troop planet. It took weeks for our fastest ships to fly from Earth to Blood World. Any enemy who decided to capture or destroy the place could do the dirty deed before we could get there if we kept the whole fleet in orbit above Earth. It occurred to me that this exact problem had once faced the Empire. At some point in the past, they'd realized they needed local defense stations and fleets. That's why they'd built Battlefleet 921 and sent her to patrol our province. All that seemed to be history now, however, as the Empire was crumbling. Earth, at the fringe of the fringe, was starting to break away. I could feel it happening now, having lived a long time and fought on many worlds. Back in the old, old days when Europe had first conquered the Earth, they'd been forced to colonize and maintain local garrisons of troops and ships. Traveling from England to America, for example, took weeks. Enemy raiders would come and go, plundering valuables long before a distant imperial force could respond. Local strongholds, a fleet and an army in the heart of the disputed territory. I was intrigued, and I began to wonder why I'd been called here today. Why Legion Varus officers were present, and no one else. Now, Drusus said, in order to continue, I must swear you all to secrecy. But don't take this oath lightly. The penalty for violating it is permadeath. That got everyone's attention. Yes, he said. It's that important. Let's have an oath. Show your hands if you pledge to defend what you're about to learn with your life. All your lives. My hands shot up. Slowly, dozens of others did the same. Very well, Drusus said, running his eyes over us proudly. Let me explain. We're exposed out there at Blood World. We're in the middle of forming a beachhead, and we have many enemy powers to worry about. We're weak right now because we've just begun the effort. If they hit us today before we can establish ourselves, we'll be wiped out. You could have heard a pin drop. When you start talking about perming people, legionnaires tend to shut up and listen. We all knew Drusus was a praetor. He had the power, the will, and the right to carry out his threats. In short, he continued, Earth's entire effort to exert control over this vast swath of territory can be easily derailed at this point. We can't allow that. One step we're taking involves subterfuge, secrecy, stealth. Graves raised a gauntlet. Everyone looked at him. Yes, Primus? Drusus asked.
Sir, may I suggest a more private meeting? If you're going to go further, to tell us something critical.
No, Drusus said. I want you all in on this. I want every officer in Varus to hear me and hear me well. We're putting everything on the line today, and it will be your responsibility collectively if we fail. People started muttering, but they shut up when Drusus spoke again. So, Drusus said, we're in a sealed room. Your tappers have been disabled, and you're all disconnected from the grid. I glanced at my forearm. Everyone did. It was reflexive. Drusus had spoken the truth. My tapper was disconnected. Just so you understand, if these details get out, you're all dead. I can say this is fair because I'll know for certain that one of you let it get out. You will all share in that guilt. So, suspect one another. Make sure no one else is playing a dangerous game with your life. The crowd shifted and murmured. We weren't happy. How could we be? Hell, there were plenty of weasels in Varys. Tribune Galina Turov had been quiet all this time, but she'd worn a frown that seemed to grow in intensity with every point Drusus made. Finally, she raised her hand. What is it, Tribune?
Perhaps you should offer the group an out, sir,
she said. How do you mean?
Let them resign, now. No repercussions. If they feel they can't uphold the group, they can exit gracefully.
Harris, in particular, was nodding to himself as he heard this idea. I wondered if he'd actually offer his own resignation over this, or if he was hoping others would. Drusus seemed to consider the idea, but at last he shook his head. No, he said. I need you all, and you're being collectively made privy to the mission for good reason. There's no turning back. A few people eyed the exits, but no one made a run for it. For that, I was thankful. It would have been a shameful thing, something a hog would have done. I'm trusting you, Drusus continued, because you have honor and grit. I've come to ask Legion Varys to make sacrifices because you're our best commandos, our dirtiest of dirty fighters, veterans of conflicts most people don't even know occurred. It was all true. We already had so many secrets entrusted to us, it was hard to count them all. The least of these might cause the Magwa to burn Earth to ash if they found out about them. How do you get a man to keep a secret? Put a gun to his head. That was the Legion Varys answer. That was the Varys way. Time to reveal our destination, he said. This is the target star. Some people winced and squeezed their eyes almost shut. Harris and Leeson were among these. I wondered if they figured they could save themselves from a treason charge if they squinted hard enough. The displayed star system was unremarkable. It was only 6 light-years away from Blood World. We've chosen this target because—
Hold on, Winslade interrupted. Praetor, sir, did you say we have chosen the target? How many other hegemony officers are privy to this vital secret?
I knew what he was doing, of course. He was setting up doubt ahead of time. Nothing motivated Winslade like threatening his precious skin. In this case, he'd gotten the bright idea of identifying another possible scapegoat for the future. Very well, Drusus said. You've caught me in a lie. No one else knows this destination. I'm revealing it to you for the first time. It took me years to choose this spot. Winslade crossed his arms and cinched up his mouth in disappointment. Drusus began to pace. You have to understand, troops, that Earth has had plans all along. Contingency plans, you might call them. We knew that the Empire might someday sputter out. That day seems uncomfortably near. For now, they've given us the right to conquer neighboring suns. That's all well and good if it ends there. But it might be more than that. It might be the beginning of the end. I spoke up again. It was as if a devil inside me opened my mouth and forced words out. Tribune, I asked, how long have you been planning for this?
Years. A decade, maybe longer. These steps, they're not random. Notice we first captured a planet full of mineral wealth, and we established ourselves as a two-world civilization. That part, I admit, was somewhat random. But more recently, when we took a world with great technical prowess and brought back their discoveries to Earth, and when we captured a planet full of ready-made soldiers, these steps were foreseen. Never in the exact details, but definitely in the manner one plots to conquer a child's puzzle by locating the corners first, then completing the frame, then filling in the middle. Somehow I found his speech comforting. It was good to know someone was minding the store.
Accordingly, I shut up and let him finish. Here, he said, making the target near Blood World's star light up. He gestured, and the system zoomed in. This is our target, 39 Eridani. It is a binary star approximately 206 light-years from Earth. There are a lot of binary stars in this region of space. From our point of view, it's visible only from the southern hemisphere. He lit up scores of other systems nearby. They were all numbered and collectively called Eridani stars. All of them were doubles or even triple star systems. In any case, he said, we're going out there because we've learned of a large superstructure orbiting the target world. It's an amazing industrial facility in space, a giant space dock. The cephalopods built it, but it has fallen into disrepair. We're going to capture it, repair it, and liberate the strange people who live out there. How are they strange? I wanted to ask that, I really did, with every fiber of my being. But I managed to keep quiet. I'd spoken up enough at this meeting, which had kicked off with a threat of general permadeath for the lot of us. That's all for now. You'll be shipping out in 10 days. Your cover story involves a deployment to Machine World, which is partly true. You will go there, make an appearance for the miners, then vanish in an unexpected direction, heading deeper into the disputed zone. Hopefully, no one will be the wiser. Chapter 8. After the meeting, we were all irritable and glum. We'd been informed yet again of our possible doom due to the leaking of information by any single member of the officer corps, then dismissed. Why the hell did he bother to tell us where we were going at all? Leeson wanted to know. He had a bottle of beer in each hand and the corners of his mouth were wet. Maybe it's a trap, Harris said. A test. Maybe he showed us the wrong world. Maybe he just wants to see if one of us leaks it, so he can find the leaker and squash him. Leeson swilled down 6 fast gulps of the beer in his left hand. I'd noticed he'd been favoring the left one lately. It was almost empty. Either that, he said, or he set us up to fail. 100 people can't keep a secret like that. This is all an excuse to perm the officers of Varus, a clean sweep. A purge! He slashed his right hand, armed with a full bottle, across our shared table. He nailed my beer in the process, and the glass broke and tinkled to the floor. Nah, I said, signaling the annoyed waitress for a fresh brew. Drusus isn't sneaky like that. If he wanted us dead, he'd just kill us straight out. They both nodded in agreement, but no one seemed especially happy. Later that day, I returned from my lengthy lunch to the recruiting booth. Winslade came in late for his shift, too. I complained at him about it, but he just sneered at me. At least I got some sign-ups last night, he said. He slid a tablet my way. I caught it, and I reviewed the names. 3 candidates had signed up the night before, after I had quit for the day. A moment's thought made me realize why it had gone that way. I recalled my own experiences in the hall many long years ago. I tried every reputable, famous legion upstairs first. After having washed out, I'd eventually found my way down to the loser legion booths downstairs under the main floor. We were huddled around the train station, hawking to those who came in on the train or those who were on their last legs and heading home. As a refuge of last resort for the desperate, it only made sense we'd get most of our sign-ups in the evening. See there, Winslade boasted. 3 sign-ups. More than you managed all day long. I slid the tablet back toward him, and he barely caught it before it went off the edge of the counter. I didn't bother explaining to him what had happened. If he thought he was a great salesman with a gift of gab for young recruits, I'd let him have his... Just a second, I said, reaching over and plucking the tablet back out of his skinny fingers. I paged through the contracts. 1, 2, 3. There he was. His face wore a crooked, knowing, smug expression I wouldn't soon forget. It was none other than Cooper, the asshat who'd so pissed me off on my first day in the booth. I laughed loud and long. Angrily, Winslade took the tablet back from me. He didn't get it, and I didn't care to enlighten him. Instead, I daydreamed about the special surprises we had in store for Cooper in what passed for boot camp with Legion Varus. It might even be fun to watch this time around. Several days rolled by, and we got a few sign-ups every evening. As we were missing our quotas, it was announced that we could offer signing bonuses. That kicked it up a notch. 200,000 credits didn't go far these days, but to some of these kids, it was a fortune. On the last day before we were to ship out, the shock of my life came. It was about 6 p.m. After a day in the booth, I'd gone to the Overlook Cafe and had myself a few beers and sandwiches. When I was about to leave and go back to Central, I'd taken up residence in the barracks there since renting hotel rooms every night was breaking me. I realized I'd forgotten my coat. Riding down the escalator, I noticed a young female recruit was standing at the Varus booth talking to Winslade. He was all charm. His toothy smile and raised eyebrows told me he thought he'd caught a live one. I frowned, because something was familiar. Halfway down the escalator, I began bounding down the rest of the steps, bowling aside innocent people. I'm a big man, and when I come down a set of steps and blindsiding people, well, they go down like wheat in the path of a scythe. I tried not to step on them as a few were face down and yelling, but most rode the escalator to the bottom on their bellies. When I was about 4 meters from the bottom, I vaulted over the side of the escalator, landed on my boots, and charged the booth. I think the thing that surprised people most was I wasn't shouting. Many people in a hurry to prevent a catastrophe shouted a lot, but it wasn't going to help in this case. It might even, in fact, cause that darned girl to go faster. At the end, Winslade caught sight of me. His eyes widened when he saw me tearing up behind the girl he was talking to, boots hammering on the puffcrete. My clenched teeth were all exposed in a snarl. "What the—" he began, but I was already there. Both Etta's hand and mine made a reach for Winslade's tablet. We lunged right at him, and Winslade must have thought he was a dead man. He recoiled, and the tablet he'd been paging through slipped through his fingers. I leapt over the countertop, caught the tablet, and lifted it high.
"Damn it, Daddy!" Etta complained, snatching at the tablet. "That's my contract! You haven't got the right!"
"Daddy?" Winslade echoed, his jaw sagging. "That's right," I told him angrily. I ignored the girl, hopping and grunting. She was still trying to pry the tablet from my fingers and sign it. She's got the devil in there, I've always said it. "Winslade, meet Etta McGill."
"Etta McGill? That's not the name she gave me."
"Of course not," Etta said. She'd stopped hopping and stood with her arms crossed and her brow furrowed in rage.
"I'm not a total fool."
"What's more, she's underage," I continued. "She must have hacked the door recognition system somehow."
"I thought you were off shift by now, Dad," Etta complained.
"I am, but I forgot my jacket. Winslade, if you'd be so kind." He handed over my jacket, bemused and stunned.
"Your daughter is trying to sign up with the Legions, and you don't approve. Is that it?"
"Not exactly," Etta said. "I'm trying to sign up with Varus. Only Varus."
"And they would have taken you," I said, "but only for a few days until someone figured out who you were and got you dismissed. You're underage, girl." She crossed her arms and shrugged.
"Maybe," she said. "You ship out soon. What if I was already aboard Nostrum?"
"It says she's 18 here," Winslade added unhelpfully.
"Everything appears to be official. So give me something to sign," Etta said.
Winslade looked like he was considering it, but one glance at my angry face changed his mind.
"Sorry," he said.
"How do you manage to change your age? You're not even 15 yet." Etta shrugged.
"I'm a dust worlder. We're born when we want to be. There's no official record, not until you make one."
I set my jaw in anger, But I realized, like a zillion fathers before me, that I had to tread carefully. Young women held lots of cards when they dealt with their parents in their teen years, some of those cards they usually weren't even aware of. "Does your grandmother know you're up here pulling this?" I demanded. She hung her head a little.
"No,"
she admitted.
"She's under the impression I'm on a school trip."
"Uh-huh." While she was looking down, I tapped on Winslade's tablet. I erased the contract, canceling it, and handing it back to Winslade. He released an unpleasant laugh.
"You know, there's nothing you can do legally at this point."
I looked at him, stunned.
"You mean she already signed?" "No, no, but you can't really stop her. If she wants to sign, and she's 18, she's not 18, damn it."
Winslade shook his head.
"I'm trying to be helpful here, McGill. The computer says she's 18. That makes her 18. At some point when you're not here..."
I got it. He was telling me I'd lost control of my girl. "I could prove in court she's underage, I think." Etta wasn't saying anything. She just listened, arms crossed, and she rolled her eyes at me whenever I spoke. I didn't like the feeling of confidence she was exhibiting. She figured she had this, and it didn't matter what I did to try to stop her. She was a smart girl, too smart by half, and she usually got her way in the end. But I was a man who was used to getting my way, too. I looked at her seriously. "No way are you joining Varys, girl. I'll get you blackballed by the Tribune. Permanently."
"That would do it," Winslade chimed in. "But I do hear the Iron Eagles are offering a bonus today as well. I want to join Varys, not the Eagles or anyone else. Dad, you can't get me blackballed. I'm your own daughter."
"Just watch me, girl. Sign whatever you want to, but you're not joining Varys." That was it for me. While she fumed, I turned around and walked off. I headed for the SkyTrain station. Before I got there, I heard small, rapid footsteps behind me. I felt a jab in the kidney. Reaching back automatically, I grabbed her wrist, but I managed to ease off so I didn't break it. She hadn't stabbed me after all, she'd just punched me in a rage. That was my fault, I guess. Partly her mother Della's fault, too. Etta was still only half civilized. She'd grown up for her first 10 years or so on Dustworld. That was a wild, desert planet, a colony that Earth governed, but only in theory. People gawked at us as they passed to board the trains, but I ignored them. They kept moving after a few angry glances from both of us.
"What are you doing?"
I asked her.
"Why do you want to go through a meat grinder so badly, girl? It was good enough for you and Mom. Why not me?"
"Because you don't understand. It's a terrible thing."
"I want to see the stars, Daddy,"
she said, rubbing her wrist.
"I'm from the stars. I don't belong on Earth. Not really."
Sighing, I shook my head. I was up against a powerful attraction. The Legions advertised constantly. They knew what sites kids visited on the grid. They knew what was trending and what wasn't. And they knew how to appeal to the disaffected, the lonely, the desperate. Recruiting was an ancient art, as old as the first Roman frescoes depicting glory. They'd painted them on the stone walls of places like their Colosseum and their military barracks a few thousand years back.
"It's not a good life," I told her. "I want better for you."
"If it's so painful, then why do you keep re-upping your contract?"
she asked.
"You could retire any time now and draw a pension."
She had me there. She was right. I could have left the service, but it had become my way of life.
"Look," I told her, "it's in my blood now. I'm a legionnaire by trade. I've never known anything else. But it doesn't have to be that way for you. I don't want it to be like that."
Instantly, her mood shifted again from pleading to rage. That was the way with her and her mama, too. They had grimly fast tempers.
I'm going to decide my own life's path, not you.
She stalked away from me then, back into the hall. I watched her go, and I thought about going after her. But I didn't. I couldn't. I'd stopped her from joining Varys for now, and that would have to be enough. Talking to her further after I'd won the day, that would only piss her off more. So I let her go, and I felt a pang in my heart as she vanished into the crowds. Damn it. Sometimes parenting sucked. Chapter 9. I got news that Florimel had been revived the next day, but I never got to see her because we'd gotten the order to ship out. We exchanged texts and a few pics on my tapper. We wished each other well, and I got something close to a promise of a fine date when I got back. Apparently, someone had told her I'd worked hard to get her revived. That same night, Legion Varys filed aboard the lifters. We roared up into orbit to meet Nostrum, our Legion's transport. The nice texts from Florimel made me smile, but I was too distracted to enjoy it or even to flirt properly. While we were in flight, I kept scanning the recruitment logs. I brought up the picture of every new recruit we'd signed up over the last 24 hours. Etta was a hacker, so the names didn't matter, but the hall took headshots of every candidate, set to spin in 3D. It would be hard to fake that. Etta wasn't there, and I breathed a sigh of relief. I dodged a bullet. But for how long?
Checking out the fresh fish, huh, McGill?
Harris boomed next to me. I glanced at him, and he shook his head, tisking.
Shameful, he said. It's a shameful thing when an officer is scanning for a date among the rawest of the recruits.
Glancing back at my tapper, I cleared the screen. I had been looking only at females and only at the fresh sign-ups. I didn't feel like explaining myself to Harris, so I ignored him. That was hard to do, as he wasn't done poking at me yet. He'd been in an insufferably cheerful mood ever since I'd been busted down to adjunct again. He didn't have to call me sir anymore, and he very much appreciated that twist of fate.
"Did you hear there were two arrests?" he said, changing the topic. "For treason, I mean."
"What?
Who?" "Both were adjuncts. One was Henderson, that puke sniffer over in Sixth."
I knew him, but only vaguely. He'd never seemed like an impressive officer.
"But the other,"
Harris said, and he began to grin again.
"The other struck very close to home."
"Who?"
"Adjunct Toro. Our own beloved she-monster from the Third. Can you believe that?"
"What's the charge?"
"Espionage, sedition, whatever. She's gone. She's not on the lifter. Didn't you notice?"
I looked around, and I finally realized there was only Harris, Leeson, and myself. Winslade was glumly playing Centurion at the end of the line of jump seats.
"Holy shit,"
I whispered.
"Drusus really did it?
I thought he said if anyone squealed, all of us were going to be permed."
"Yeah, maybe that was just him bluffing, putting a scare into us. But they've been watching. Our tappers scan us constantly, you know."
I nodded. I knew that. I'd learned all about it the hard way long ago.
"So," Harris continued, "I figure they did sweeps until they found out who leaked what, and then they arrested them this morning."
"Right," I said, chewing that over. Central was taking the secrecy of this mission very seriously. Maybe they wouldn't really execute us all for a breach, but they meant business.
"Do you think they're going to get permed?"
I asked.
"Maybe," Harris mused. "Hard to say. At the very least, they're being debriefed by the hogs under Central."
"I've been down there in the brig," I said. "It's no big deal." Harris chuckled and shook his head.
"Maybe not to you, but they may not be in the brig. Central has some floors people don't normally venture into. In the upper basement, floors -1 to -20, they have police barracks and an extensive prison section, Everybody knows about that. But lower down, under floor -100, that's a dungeon.
I nodded, having heard such things before. We've been down lower, I said, in the bunkers and the research chambers, all the way down to -500 about.
Right. But did you ever notice that zone between -100 to about -200? The elevators always skip right past them. That's where the political types are, handled.
Thinking about that, I wrinkled my nose in disgust. I didn't like torture. I'd been at the receiving end more times than I knew about. In many cases, it had happened to McGills who hadn't lived to see the morning. But I couldn't remember enough to know I didn't like it. My mind fell back to Etta. To me, this all seemed like one more big fat reason I didn't want to see my daughter join this outfit. Snakes like Winslade, Turov, and a dozen others, who knew what kind of crap they might pull on my little girl? As worldly, smart, and mean as Etta was, she didn't know half as much as she thought she did about the universe yet. Not by a long shot. When I got the chance, I resolved myself to bring up the topic to Turov about permanently banning her from Varys. We'd shipped out so fast I hadn't had time to approach her. Now that we were engaged in a mission, and I was a low-tier officer again, my access would be further reduced. I'd have to bide my time. The last stage of the lifter trip was routine. When our lifter docked, the officers hustled aboard Nostrum and moved quickly through the internal passages to the last docking bay in the line. Officers who had holes in their rosters had been invited to watch how the new kids dealt with the first training scenario. People were crowding the windows to watch. You would have thought it was the Hegemony Championships. The brass had seen to it that all the raw recruits were packed into the last lifter, and they were kept in Null G. The regulars and non-coms who had come up with them scuttled off, leaving the kids behind, locked in their seats. We watched through darkened portholes, crowding around. Harris laughed and hooted when they began to pump the air out. "Now they know they're in trouble. Look, the first one broke loose. Dibs on that girl."
"Wait your turn," Winslade said. "McGill has been assigned to the new platoon this time. He has priority in picking new splats for this campaign."
Harris grumbled. I didn't even watch. I couldn't enjoy watching people suffocate and panic. Not today. I couldn't help but think of Etta in there, dying and freaking out, thinking she'd be permed on the first day of her new job.
"Ooh," Harris whooped. "That frigger in the back, he's got spunk. Look at him go. Look, McGill."
I didn't bother to look up. I kept working my tapper. Winslade said.
"I think I know that recruit. Cooper, isn't it? McGill has a special relationship with that young man."
Cooper. Sparked into action, I crowded up to the porthole and stared. Cooper was vicious. He'd clawed his way out of the restraints, slipping them off somehow. Behind him trailed a floating series of blood drops. He was injured, but he didn't seem to care. The other recruits were mere props to him as he fought to pass them by. Eyes were gouged. People were shoved aside. He wasn't a big man. He was fit and fast, but with a more or less average build. What he lacked in bulk, he more than made up for in savagery. He'd gotten hold of a writing stylus, and anyone who got in his way he stabbed without compunction. In the final moments, as recruits were choking out, convulsing, and dying all over the lifter, Cooper made it to the exit. He laid strong hands on the wheel, and he tried to turn it, but he had no leverage. The point of the exercise, besides putting the fear of Varys into their hearts, was to get the troops to work together. Now and then a resourceful group operated as a team and escaped. With two men holding another trooper's legs, one could spin the wheel pretty easily. But with nothing to push against in Null G, they were doomed. Cooper had long since driven off any such allies he might have used now. He got to the porthole, and he met a grim stare from me. After a few seconds of struggling with the wheel, He realized he couldn't open it. Harris and Winslade watched with me, but it was my big face in the glass. That's what Cooper saw. Maybe he recognized me in those final moments, or maybe not. It's hard to say. In any case, he showed me his teeth in a feral snarl, and he flipped me the bird. Cooper died with his middle finger up, and Harris whistled long and low. I'll be damned. What an animal. I'll take him, I said. I want that boy. Really? Harris asked. Well, you can have him. He's an asshole. I'm telling you right now, he'll be trouble every day and every night. I thought for sure you'd take one of those ladies back there with the polished nails and fluffy hair who never even got out of their seats. Nope, I said. I choose Cooper.
So noted, Winslade said in a bored voice, marking down the draft pick on his tablet.
Why Cooper? Harris asked me, honestly curious. I glanced at him. Because that man belongs in Legion, Varys. He's a killer. I can work with that. Harris made a puffing sound. Well, good luck.
Chapter 10. After the recruiting drive was over, I met with my platoon, and I was in for a surprise. Winslade gathered us all up in our assigned module. He looked even more sour-faced than usual. I suspected he'd become accustomed to flying desks up on Gold Deck, and this business of slumming with actual troops rubbed him wrong. In my book, that was just too damned bad.
We've got an announcement from Torov coming in at the top of the hour. Please remain quiet and respectful during her speech.
Harris raised his hand first. I'd wanted to do the same, but I was glad he'd beat me to it. Harris jabbed a thumb in my direction, then his own.
Sir, these ranks are thin. I know I recruited a few, but there aren't enough to—
That's what the announcement is about. We've got more reinforcements coming up in 2 special lifters. Your ranks will be filled with recruits. I doubt they will be to your liking, however.
Harris and I exchanged confused glances. We had no idea what he was talking about, but we were each about a squad short by my count. Our unit was a mixed one to begin with. Our normal order of battle was to have 1 platoon of heavy troops in battle armor, a platoon of lights with snap rifles, and another made up of specialists and heavy weapons teams. Since Toro had been arrested, I wasn't sure how Winslade was going to deal out the reinforcements. Torov's big face finally flickered into life on the main screen.
Legionnaires, she said. I've got a treat for you all, a surprise, an opportunity to prove once again that Legion Varys is the groundbreaking test case for everyone else in Earth's military.
The camera was tight on her face up until this moment, and she looked pretty good.
So, Harris whispered to me, word is that you managed to tap that just last week. Was it worth losing rank?
He was so happy I found him irritating. Accordingly, I smiled and nodded. It was totally worth it.
Seriously? I wouldn't lie about that.
Harris stared at me for a long second, and I held firm to my boast, looking 100% certain. I stared up at the giant image of Galina Turov like I was basking in the glory of a goddess. At last, Harris decided I was messing with him, and he made a rude noise. The camera was panning back now, showing us what was around Turov. We gasped in shock. Rows of troops stood arrayed around her, but they weren't human troops. Not exactly. There was a mix of aliens present. Heavy troops from Blood World made up about half. Then there were some others. A few towering, idiot-faced giants, a tall, skinny slaver or two, and even a saurian raptor. But what caught my eye and made me really gasp was an oddly shaped, bulky figure in dark fabric. I knew that hunched body, that fat core, the 8 dangling limbs. A squid? I shouted aloud, overcome with emotion. Winslade instantly frowned at me and waved a shushing hand. My mouth gaped. It was an honest-to-God cephalopod. That was hard to take. Sure, I'd fought to the death with all these aliens and near-humans, but a squid? That was a bridge too far in my book. I'm not serving with any damn squids, I muttered.
Shut up, McGill. Our squid will be joining Harris and his platoon of heavy troops. You won't have to deal with him.
Say what? Harris snapped. Slack-jawed, I kept staring. Turov was talking again, but it took me a few moments to tune back in and comprehend what she was saying.
This grand experiment is broader in nature than would be the norm. We're studying how an integrated legion can fight with approximately 30% of the troops being, foreign-born. I know that you will welcome these newcomers and...
Friggin' squids! I burst out again suddenly.
You've got to be shitting me!
Shut up, McGill! Winslade barked.
That's an order. We have to have one squid in each unit.
Why? I demanded.
To manage the blood worlders, they're conditioned to listen to the cephalopods.
Why do we have to have any blood worlders at all? Harris asked.
Because, Winslade said between clenched teeth, we just conquered an entire planet load of them. How did you think we were going to deploy them? We need to understand them, and they need to understand us. What's so hard to grasp about that?
Dumbfounded, we turned back to watch Turov again. She began doing some kind of dog and pony show with the aliens. She had them lift big objects while they smiled with crooked teeth at the camera. I guess she was trying to show how strong and friendly these monsters really were. But I wasn't buying it. Not for a second. I don't like squids, I muttered. For once, Harris whispered, I'm with you 100%. Leeson walked over nonchalantly to join us. He gave me a hard look.
Did he know about this bullshit, McGill?
Fuck no, he didn't, Harris said. Didn't you hear him mouthing off in shock? Leeson looked around and lowered his voice. McGill always mouths off. What I want to know is, how are we going to fix this? Harris and Leeson both looked at me then. In our unit, I had a rep as the man who got things done, even when the brass didn't want them done. My mind is a blank, I admitted.
That's just shock, Leeson said.
He turned back to Harris, who was still staring at the screen with wide eyes.
Don't worry, McGill will come up with something. He always does.
This is bullshit, Harris said, listening to Turov and glaring. Total bullshit. I didn't sign up with Varys to manage a zoo. Turov was strutting around now in front of the alien troops. When she got close to the heavy troopers, who were hulking men with massive limbs and thick bones, she recoiled. Ha, Harris said. Right there, see that? She caught a whiff. Why don't you put that ape in your quarters with you, lady? The troops who overheard him laughed. A buzzing started among them.
Harris, I'm warning you right now, Winslade said. Unless you want to enjoy a demotion of your own back down to veteran, you'll curb your mouth.
Harris shut up in a hurry. His eyes spoke of hate and death when they landed on Winslade, but he wasn't saying a word. Not a damned word. He liked being an officer, even if he wasn't entirely fit for the job. When the new recruits arrived, it wasn't a happy day in our unit. They were led by an individual known as Silt, who was a card-carrying cephalopod. Silt was a large, imposing creature. He was alien and bulky. There was an indescribable aura of menace about him. It was something about the way his thick, dark tentacles drifted and rasped upon the deck while he stared at us with numerous, baleful eyes.
I can't believe it's come down to this, Leeson said quietly.
I knew how he was feeling. We'd spent years fighting the cephalopods, killing their troops while they killed ours. To have to serve alongside these aliens? Well, no one who had lived through those wars was happy about it.
"Sub-veteran Silt," Winslade said, stepping forward. "Meet my supporting officers. These three are my adjuncts."
"These beings serve you?"
Silt's translator asked as his own words spluttered and smacked behind it.
"Ah, yes."
"Then I respect only you. I will listen only to you. I will not respond to the bleating of..."
"Hold on," Winslade said, putting up a hand in a languid gesture.
"Your rank is that of a non-com. Therefore, you will give deference to me and all my officers."
Silt's limb churned for a moment. I could tell he was unhappy.
"I will obey,"
he said at last.
"Good. Now that that's settled, we'll place you and your men in these quarters."
One thing about Winslade, he knew how to finesse something like a bad case of B.O. The squid himself stank a little, as he liked to swim in murky water, and his wetsuit was kind of drippy, but that was nothing compared to the raw stench of his troops. Crowding up behind him were a dozen and a half heavy troopers. These were men that weighed 400 kilos or more. They were a solid 3 meters in height on average, but if they could stand straight, they might be even taller. As it was, their hulking bodies seemed forever hunched forward, like men bending to shovel dirt or to drag a heavy burden. Their eyes weren't the eyes of idiots, but you could tell they weren't thinking men either. They were cunning and possessed of an intellect that reminded me of a forest predator. They ran their eyes over everyone present, as if sizing us up. They hung together in two tight groups, and it was then that I realized we had two sets of 9, two sets of littermates. Each group was made up of close-knit brothers, all with the same brood mother back home on Blood World. Looking over the troops, I was at least relieved not to see slavers, full-on giants, or other types of Blood Worlders. At least it was just the littermates.
"Who is going to have to babysit this parade?" Leeson demanded.
"I've given that considerable thought," Winslade said, rubbing at his chin. "Toro has been removed from her platoon. Her armored troops would work most naturally together with these men."
There was a murmur of dismay from Toro's platoon, but Winslade ignored them.
"Normally," he said, "I'd place McGill in charge of the heavy platoon and add these troops there. However, McGill doesn't have the best track record when it comes to cooperating with aliens."
"Excuse me, Master,"
Silt said to Winslade.
"Don't call me Master, call me Centurion. It's more specific."
"A 1,000 rippling apologies," the squid said. "Centurion, you mentioned McGill, is that correct?"
Winslade's eyes slid toward me. His lips twisted into a scowl.
"You see, they hate you already."
Turning back to the alien, he addressed Silt.
"Yes, we do have an officer named McGill in this unit."
"Remarkable. I'm truly honored to serve the master of the McGill."
"Yes, I'm sure you are," Winslade said sourly.
"Harris, you'll take charge of these men. They seem to be more your cup of tea."
"Say what?" Harris demanded.
"Harris, your rank is in jeopardy."
Harris shut up, but he glared at everyone, daring us to make a joke. No one did.
"Yes," Winslade said more decisively. "You'll take the heaviest squad. McGill will take over your team of light troops. Many of them are raw recruits, so that's not such a bad assignment."
Harris's eyes told a different tale, but Winslade didn't seem to care.
That's settled, then. Harris, assign these men to your barracks. You'll probably need to requisition stronger bunks. Start working with Silt immediately.
So saying, Winslade beat a hasty retreat to his combination office and quarters. He promptly